Many of us are involved as leaders and board members of new or emerging nonprofits. Whether working with the homeless, the environment, animals, children, or one of the many, many types of charitable organizations, every new leader wonders, are we doing this right? Enter Renee McGivern and Nonprofit Spark. Each week, Renee and her guests walk through an area of nonprofit work in clear, concise, and practical themed shows. Whether it's about best practices, developing and keeping a volunteer force, fundraising, effective governance, or hiring staff, to name but a few. You can boost your nonprofit know-how and confidence. Renee and Nonprofit Spark have arrived.
Welcome to Nonprofit Spark, a show for leaders and board members of new and emerging nonprofits. You know, I estimate that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of volunteers right now across North America who have begun work on fall special events and related silent auctions. This show is designed to help all of you boost your success at the silent auction itself, once you've got the items in hand and people at your event. And so we're honing in on this. What are you doing to market the items in your silent auction room? For instance, are you using a sound system to make announcements about items? And is the lighting subdued? Is it supporting buying? So you'll get some very practical ideas for marketing your items on this show and consequently raising more money. My guest is such an expert about silent and live auctions that I just had to have her back on the show this week. Sherry Truler is president of Red Apple Auctions. She is a charity auction educator and on-stage auctioneer. She also is a certified meeting planner. She has worked with nonprofits on some 300 events, and you'll notice that she's a walking, talking, and lively idea machine about auctions. We laugh a lot on this show, and I hope you do too. Welcome back to Nonprofit Spark, Sherry.
Oh, I'm excited to be here. We always have such a good time chatting.
Yes, we do. All right, so before we started recording here, you were giving me an analogy related to what people need to think about as they begin planning a silent auction.
Yeah, the three-legged stool. And this is something, I don't know, I've always sort of used it, but I really started to use it, excuse me, in my speeches and talks in the last, year or so. But the idea is that any of these gala auctions are really a component of a three-legged stool. If you think about a three-legged stool, when you are, for instance, if I go to eat at a restaurant and I'm on a four-legged chair, but one of the legs is shorter than the other and I'm constantly having to balance on the three legs because the one leg will throw me backwards. Well, if you think about it, you have to have three legs. You can get by without a fourth leg, but you got to have three legs. And that's how it is in a gala. Your three legs of your gala are your item acquisition, your audience development, so like your guests, and your operations. And when you first start out your gala auction, all of those legs are kind of spindly. They're not very supportive. They'll hold your weight. You'll get the gala done. You'll get the auction out there, but it won't necessarily be as robust. But as you go through time and you get better about acquisitions and you get better people there or more people there, and you start to improve, say, your registration and checkout, and you start to change the way you do your marketing, and you start to change some other elements, you get each leg to be fatter and fatter and fatter.
Mm-hmm. I love
pretty
that
soon you've got a really thick leg, and you're sitting on that three-legged stool, and you feel really comfortable because it's going to support you in getting to the goal that you have financially. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, and the thick legs. The thing is, I'm thinking about those three legs, and I think a lot of newer auctions and the committees that are running them, they do pretty well in going after some items. You know, they've got an audience, the nonprofit has an audience to market to, but tell me more about actual operations.
Yeah. Well, and you are right, because usually the first year they've got a built-in audience. It may develop over time, and they'll get better bidders there, but to start out with, they got an audience. They go out and get some items. They learn later that maybe some of the items they brought in weren't great, and they'll adjust it. The operations piece of it is pretty expansive. And one area, you think about registration and checkout as an example of operations. You might think about the timeline of the event as being operations. You think about raffles and games. One thing is marketing is an area that a lot of people think that if you just put the items out there, they will sell. You don't need to market them. And that's not really true.
Oh, so you're talking specifically when you're talking about marketing, it's the actual items in the room. It isn't it isn't like getting 500 more people to the event. You're talking about the actual items.
All of them certainly interplay together. If you have 500 more people at your event who have money, you'll have a better option. That is true. But the tactics that you use necessarily to get, you know, 500 more people at your event, I would say fall into audience development. So when you're really talking about marketing, yes, to your point, marketing those items that you've got in your silent auction or for that matter, your live, it's what are you doing to market those items that are currently in your room?
Okay, you're right. A lot of times the layout of some auctions is confusing. Everything looks flat. It looks identical practically. And for those people that get really carried away with items, you get to item number 120, and frankly, I kind of zone out. Okay, another bottle of wine. What?
Yeah.
Okay,
well, and, you know, you're bringing up another point, too, which, you know, I know we're going to talk here. I pulled five elements that are most important to making sure that your auction is a success.
Okay.
I do want to talk about this, but you just mentioned something that is worth recapping here in a different way. You said, you know, you get to the 105th item or whatever it was, and the interesting thing about it is that the entire economic principle of an auction is based upon scarcity, that you've got a lot of people, those 500 people, bidding on a few items. That's how an auction is successful. Lots of people going after a few highly desirable things.
Gotcha.
So, but a lot of people think that putting more items out there is going to generate them more revenue. And the reality is that that's the opposite. That you put a few items out there with people that are motivated to buy, you're going to make the same amount of money or more, and it's a lot less work for you. Auctions are based on scarcity. Anyway, but that's...
Okay, cool. All right.
That's a talk unto itself. But the five points that we wanted to go into is actually more in highlighting those items that you've got for sale on the table.
Okay, highlighting the items. Okay, gotcha. Keep going.
So point number one. Let me go through all five, and then we'll delve down into it. So first, and this is specifically geared towards silent auctions because... it seems like a lot of people have silent auctions, and then some of them also have live, but silent seems to be more popular than live. I don't know why. I like live better. You make more money, but that's beside the point. The point is that, number one, sound system. That's number one. Number two is lighting. Number three, adequate space.
Okay.
Number four is
props.
Props.
Okay.
Yeah. And number five, we delve down into the bid sheet, and that is guaranteed bid.
Oh, very good. Sound and lighting. I don't think most people thought about that kind of thing before. So go ahead.
Well,
the sound and relates to the microphone or like too much noise in the room and it's got too high of a ceiling or what?
No, that's a good point. The sound, and this is what's so interesting, is we call it a silent auction, but the reality is that if you really are silent, no one's going to really bid. you've got to draw attention to things. So your silent auction actually needs to have some sound systems in it, or a sound system in it, because you're going to want to be you or your MC or your auctioneer or whatever it is. You want them on the microphone to announce things that are going on in a silent auction. So that might be, ladies and gentlemen, we are over here with the blue balloons table, right? We'll assume that they have blue balloons on their table. We're over here at the table. It's got blue balloons. I cannot believe it. We've got $800 right now for a one-week stay in Disneyland. I know someone's going to take California to go to Disneyland with their family. 1 week right now, $800. I know someone's going to want to do this. Come on over here. Check this out. Because right now you can get it for $800.
Ooh, that's a great idea. I really, honestly, sure. I don't think I've ever seen that done. Might be Minnesotans, you know. Everybody's kind of reserved.
Yeah. Now, come on. Did you grow up shopping at Kmart at all, like we did?
Well, yes. That is. I get you. That's what it's like. You're right.
It's the blue light special. That's exactly what it is. You're drawing people over. Now, are you on the microphone 100% of the time? No. But this is, you know, you get people there 15, 20 minutes into it. The first thing you might be doing is talking about these raffle tickets. And, oh, my gosh, the raffle tickets are selling so quickly. Ladies and gentlemen, we only have 18 left. Now, maybe you have 30 left, but you can exaggerate a bit. We only have 18 left, and we are selling these very rapidly. We didn't expect them to go so quickly. So please go see, you know, Helen is standing over here underneath the big sign. Go see her to get your raffle tickets.
Okay.
So you're making these announcements, but it requires a sound system. You know, now maybe it's 30 minutes into your silent auction, and now you're starting to see the things that are popular and the things that aren't popular. Well, I know that with my team, when we go in, we have two goals. Number one, everything sells. So if there's something that's not selling, we are promoting it until we get a bid. That's number
one.
Oh,
very good. I can't tell you how often I've participated in them, and I mean even organized them, and some of those things just didn't fly, and I ended up carrying them back to the office, and then the donors wanted them put out again at the next one next year, and back and forth schlepping these things. So I like that. You're actually saying, no, actually pinpoint some and draw people's attention to it if it's not going.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you're going to be able to tell that about 30 minutes in, or certainly 45 minutes in.
Well, it makes the donor happy, too, that you're giving it some attention.
And if for heaven forbid, it doesn't sell, you can say, you know, gosh, we
tried
this thing multiple times. We talked to people. But, you know, the idea is that you get people's attention. Now, is everybody going to stop and listen? No, but that's not the point. What I do is, you know, I make the announcement. People then will say, I'm sorry, I just missed what you were saying. What were you saying? I'm saying, look over there. Helen is carrying, maybe Helen is holding balloons, right? She's holding blue balloons. Helen has identified a great item over there. Go see her. She's got this great item to Disneyland. And it's a steal right now.
Very good. Well, you're listening to Nonprofit Spark. I'm your host, Renee McGivern, and I'm speaking with Sherry Truler. She's been on the show two other times before, and I just love chatting with her. She is the owner of Red Apple Auctions, and she works as a charity auction educator and an onstage auctioneer. She knows more about silent live auctions than anyone I know. So let's keep going on the items here about related to marketing.
So that's, you've got to have a sound system in your silent auction. Sounds counterintuitive, but that's what you're doing it for, making announcements, drawing attention. Number two, lighting. So if this was a webinar, I would show you a photo of an event that I did about 3 years ago, and it was in the Four Seasons. Nice hotel. You did in the Four Seasons?
Yes, definitely.
Yes, they are. Nice hotel. They've got these items out there, and they don't, you know, this is what I hear from people saying, well, it's, you know, it's a cocktail party.
Also, they want it kind of like a mood.
Yes, we want a certain mood. And I would show you a photo of candlelight everywhere. They had candlelight.
Oh, no. Oh, no, that's not good.
Now, why are you saying that? You tell me why you're saying that.
Who can see anything? Who can see the items? And then it's also like it makes everyone whisper. When we were kids, if my mother just finally had it with six kids, she'd have candlelight at dinner, and then we'd all quiet down.
Oh, that's a great story. I hadn't heard that before, but I like that's true. You know, it lowers the volume, too. But, you know, people say, well, we don't want it to be like an eighth-grade dance in here, you know.
Oh,
and I'm like, well, I don't know about your, you know, your eighth-grade dances. But the idea here is that most of your bidders, most, you know, depending on who's listening to the show here and what they're targeting, but most people are going to be over 40 years old. So they're browsing through these items, and most people at a certain age
can't
wearing
read.
Glasses. Yes, exactly. So it baffles me. I had a hospice group. This one had a better ending. A hospice group, and I'm standing there overlooking kind of the silent auction, and it's dark. I mean, the sun is starting to go down. They only have the sconces lit up in this hallway where the hotel is. And the auction chair turns to me, and she says, gosh, I don't know. You know, it looks a little dark, particularly over there where there's this, they have a fur, a mink stole or fur.
Oh, Lord.
Which was like their most expensive item. And it was kind of in a dark corner.
Yeah.
And I said, it is pretty dark in here. I said, but you know, I said the name of the gala chair, isn't around to ask. And she said, well, she said she wanted to keep it dark and darker in here, which is the sconces for the mood lighting. And I turned to the auction chair and I said, I don't know, man. I thought we were here to make money.
Yeah.
And she
right.
looked at me and she said, we are here to make money. And she stormed off, and 3 minutes later, all the lights came on. So that's an example, though. You want to, just as you picked up on immediately, but sometimes, you know, we're so close to the tree, we can't see the forest, and people think, oh, well, we don't want to have it too bright in here. We want to keep it moody.
Well, for heaven's sakes, you put a fur in the corner, in the dark corner. It looks like some animal. I mean, it's like it's about to move or something.
Like,
oh, my
yeah,
gosh.
Well, so lighting. And you can do that in different ways. I mean, it can be the hotel lights. It can be that you bring in can lights. You know, the they look like a can. Like I
yes.
had one school, it looked like they just brought them in from their house. But, I mean, it worked.
Yeah.
It can be little lights. One school I worked with had little lights, but they had little battery operated. They used them every year. They were just little spotlights. Worked out pretty well. I don't know where they got them. They didn't look like they were that expensive, but they use them every year.
What's number three?
Okay, so number three comes down to adequate spacing.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this because I've just been to one too many events where they pile too many things on the table. And when you, I want you to think about, like, if you go into Target, or really even like Office Depot or Staples, that sometimes they'll have a big bin and they'll say, you know, like any $5 for $20 for the underwear in the Target bin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe at the Office Depot, it's, you know, $5 for $10 for the used school magnets. But it's
okay.
like a bulk sale. They just throw it all together, and whenever it's all thrown together, we immediately assume that it's cheap. You know, it's $5 for $20. It's
yes.
$3 for $10. It's whatever. And in order to really showcase your items, you're going to want to have adequate space, present them properly. Because if you go into a high-end jewelry store, you don't see stuff just packed in onto the case. You know, it's like, here's a display, here's a nicer display, here's a display. And the items that are the most valuable have their own display.
Yes, pretty much so. So there's really something to learn from merchandising, like at our
yes.
local stores, isn't there? Because, yeah, even then it's overwhelming. You go to a table and there's twice as many items that should be there. You don't know where to look.
Yeah, it does. And if it's too much, like if you think of the sale racks after, you know, holidays where they've got so many dresses shoved into a rack and you try to pull out the hanger of one and it gets caught in the spaghetti strap dress next to it and you're like, oh, I'm
yeah.
trying to get this dressed out and I can't. But we're expecting things when they're overcrowded to be cheap.
Yes, I hear you. That's very good. Very good point.
So we want to just keep that in mind, that give every item, you know, that might be 18 inches. You might, you know, a lot of the best options I see laid out on an 8-foot table, they're getting anywhere from 3 items to 5 if they're using both sides.
Wow.
So that's nice spacing there for your items. It's not one right next to the other.
Well, here's the other thing, Sherry, that reminds me of the spacing is there are times where I've seen entire tables and all it is the bid sheet. And how do you feel about that? It's like they don't have anything to show. Somebody's going to, you know, do your hair, you know, haircuts for a year for your family or something. And there's nothing. There's nothing there.
Are you segueing into my next point intentionally, or is this just happening at like a beautiful composition?
Oh, I'm feeding in. I'm just feeding into it, Sherry. I didn't realize
right, well,
that's where we were going.
Well,
but, okay.
Let's go with melody then. Let's dance. All right. The next one is props. The next point, number four, is props. And props is what's going to help sell your item. So in the case, that the example that you just gave, I would have had, what did you say it was?
Haircuts for a year.
Haircuts. Okay, so what are you going to do? Well, when people sell haircuts in the magazines, what do? You know, have a photo of someone there with a great haircut. Or if it's for kids, you know, have the kids there at 12 months. Maybe it's a calendar, a photo
okay.
of a calendar with a haircut on every month. The idea is that you've got to somehow visually display these things. Don't make people read. We are drawn to photos for a reason. There's a reason the phrase is a picture's worth 1,000 words. So your props are going to help sell it. If that is, for instance, you've got a cake a month, right, for 12 months, or
mm-hmm.
you got cookies there. have some of the cookies there broken up so people can try them. I can't tell you the number of times there's been apple strudel out there, or there's been a bit of a rum cake, and you can try something before you buy it. That will help to sell it. That's a prop that will help sell it. If you've got a band that is going to perform at a function, and that's what you're selling, is this band will perform at your function, have the CD player there. So you can listen to the iPod and listen to what the music's like. You want to have something there that either visually or experientially helps to sell the item. Going back to the merchandising, this is the same concept. When you're in the mall and you walk by Mrs. Field's cookies, you smell those cookies.
Yes.
And it helps to sell the items. It brings you in. They say the same thing even like if you're selling your home or something, you know, right? They want you to make the home look like it's a beautiful home. So there's been a whole cottage industry now that's developed around staging a house.
We're going to take a little break for a word from our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Clifton Gunderson and Larson Allen, two national accounting firms, have come together to form Clifton Larson Allen. The combined firm serves more than 5,900 nonprofit and government clients. You can call on Clifton Larson Allen for help with financial and compliance audits, tax preparation, temporary or full-time accounting assistance, and to develop proactive financial strategies for tough economic times. Clifton Larson Allen cultivates long-lasting client relationships so they understand the issues you've faced and the challenges ahead of you. Learn more about Clifton Larson Allen on their website at www.cliftonlarsonallen.com. Clifton Larson Allen, noticeably different.
Welcome back to Nonprofit Spark. I'm your host, Renee McGivern, and you can learn more about me on my company website at sparkplugconsulting.com. I'm speaking this week with Sherry Truler. She is a charity auction educator and onstage auctioneer, and her company is Red Apple Auctions. And we're talking about five things that people need to pay attention to related to marketing your silent auction. You know, Sherry, it strikes me that what you said at the very beginning, that scarcity is makes for a better auction. But from a practical side, this is part of why scarcity is cool, because you'd actually have more time to spend on, you know, creating props and, you know, merchandising. Because people, they spend so much time collecting a zillion things, nobody had time to think about, well, how are you going to make it look?
And to that end, you will very rarely have problems finding volunteers to do what I'm talking about, because it really falls into decor. And decor, people sign up for decor committees so fast, the pen is flying from hand to hand. It's the procurement committees they don't sign up for. So when, instead of decorating the room, what we do is we redirect their energy to decorating the items, because that's where you're going to make your money. Nobody, the room doesn't make you the money. The items make you the money. So if you can get the decor committee to focus on what's on the table instead of focusing what the archway looks like when you walk into the room, you're going to have more success.
I never thought of that. So, I mean, I've seen it where the acquisition committee is doing everything. You know, they go and get it, and they create a bid sheet, and they throw it on the table because they're exhausted.
Yeah.
But you're actually saying, no, there's somebody that's doing acquisition, and then there's somebody that's making it all look good. So the decor committee, that's a great idea.
Yeah, because I don't think that, I think they're different skill sets. I think the person who's happy going out and getting things is fine doing that. Now, maybe they're creative and they want to do the decor too, but otherwise I say give it to the decor committee. The decor committee has a big job. It's making those items stand out. And, you know, if you see, you know, the parking space is available, you figure out a way to sell that parking space. Figure out a way to sell lunch with the mayor, that kind of thing.
All right, so is there anything else to say? So there is sound, lighting, adequate spacing, props.
And number five. So number five is on the bid sheet, and it's what we call guaranteed bid. Have we ever talked about this before on the show? I can't
guaranteed
remember.
Guaranteed bid. No, go for it.
Okay. So the idea is that on the bid sheet, you offer people an opportunity to purchase that item for more than its value. Usually. Sometimes it's the value, but usually it's about 125 to 150 to sometimes 200% of the value. And you say, well, gosh, why would people pay more for the item than it's worth? Well, it's called a convenience fee, right? if you want to wait and bid and, you know, come back and check again and come back and check again, you can do that and you can get it for cheap. But if you want to step it up and you're like, you know what, I want this, I like it, I want to make a contribution, fine. I'll pay the convenience fee, if you will, and I'll pay more than the item is worth so that I can go off and chat with my friends and not worry about it. I know I've got it.
So does it actually, on the bid sheet, does it, normally I see, you know, here's a minimum bid and then here's some lines and everybody could fill out their name and then put their bid amount or, you know, their corresponding number and their amount.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying also on the bid sheet there's?
In the bottom right-hand corner, right.
Okay.
So in the bottom right-hand corner of the bid sheet is we would say it's similar to, but we will not use this language. It's similar to eBay where they say buy it now. But we're not letting them buy it now. We're not calling it buy it now. We're calling it instant purchase or guaranteed bid or guaranteed purchase or take it home. I had one group that just said take it home, and they put the price down there for that item. So if the item is worth $100, and we'll say it's an average item, meaning that it could be competitive, it's nice, you know, it's not a dog, it's a nice item, then they'll generally put down 150% of that value. So if you want to pay $150, you can take it home.
Okay.
It'll vary by your crowd, your nonprofit, you know. Some items you may look at and say, oh, I don't want to put this out. This is not going to sell. We've never had success with these types of items before. If you've got an item like that, then I would suggest that the guaranteed price is 90 to 100% of the value. So if that's a $100 item, you're going to put 90 as the guaranteed bid or 100. Does that make sense?
Yes. Now, tell me, so if there's, let's say there's a, oh, I don't know, some kind of fancy bowl or object for someone's living room and it really doesn't normally go.
Uh-huh.
I am going to put the instant bid piece or that guaranteed bid 90 to 100% of it, what you would normally pay for it.
Yeah.
And I'd still have a minimum bid at the top?
You would. So
okay.
Maybe the minimum bid is going to be 30% of the value. So if it's a $100 bowl, you're starting the bidding out at $30.
Okay.
Okay. But you're giving people the opportunity to buy it immediately if they want.
Okay.
So now this does bring up a lot of controversy in some committees because some committees will say, but Sherry, Sherry, we've got something that's priceless. I mean, this is, you know, how can you possibly ever get to have lunch with the mayor? I mean, this is incredibly valuable. That's, you know, this is what I hear. And so what I would say, usually if I'm in that situation, I say, well, do you think it's going to sell for $10,000? Well, no, it's not going to sell for $10,000. Is it going to sell for $5,000? No, it's not going to sell for $5,000. Well, is it going to sell for $1,000? I don't know. I mean, we'd be lucky if we got $500. Okay, so now we've reached a goal that if $500 is on that bid sheet, you'd be happy. Put that down as a guaranteed bid. The point is that if you put $10,000 on an item, and you know it's not going to sell for that. It's just not your crowd. It's, you know, let's be realistic. If you put something down that's so astronomically high, it only discourages people. What you want to do is make that number just a little bit of a pain, a little bit, so that people are like, it's worth my time to do it. Because if you make it too high, they won't do it. But if you put it in that price point where it's like,
yes, and then as you say, convenience, it's like, I've been thinking about getting this anyway.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I have to go drive over to, you know, some other store or something. Here it is. This would work for me. So
it's, I've got mom's birthday gift all wrapped up if I just do this now. And if men love this. That's the other thing. Men love it because men, who traditionally aren't big silent auction people, men don't like, as a rule, to shop. They generally go, and I certainly have seen this with the guys I've dated, they go into a store, they buy what they need, they don't really care if it's on sale, they're not going to come back next week with a coupon, they're going to buy it right then. And this is the same in the with the guarantee bid, is it enables guys to walk in there and just buy it. It's not unusual for me to be behind the silent auction table. A woman comes up, buys the guaranteed bid. I start to congratulate her on being such a smart shopper, right?
Yes.
And she says, well, my husband told me I should just do it.
Yeah.
So even then, when women are doing it, I think it's sometimes coming from the guy. The guy's just like, yeah, if you want to, go do it. You know, it's like, it's there. So that's the big thing, too. And that is great, because then once you start selling some of these things at guaranteed bid, and maybe 5%, 3 to 5% of your items will sell at guaranteed bid, once you've sold some of those, you can start announcing it on the mic, right? Because you've got a sound system. So now you're saying, ladies and gentlemen, we just had a smart shopper. We just sold that trip to Orlando. It's gone.
Yes, yes, and which would generate some real enthusiasm and, you know, energy in the room. And how many items would you say you would do that with, or what percentage of your items?
All of them would have guaranteed bid on them. All of them would, but I'm telling you that only about 3 to 5% will actually sell at that price point. I've had some auctions that most of the items sold at that price point. Then we started to move up the price point the following year, because the idea is, again, you got to find that right balance. It may not happen in the first year. You may have to experiment with it, but it's not going to hurt you. It's not going to hurt you. And I can assure you that for all the debates I've had with committees who said, well, you know, we could have someone come out of the closet, come out of the woodwork and just bid $10,000 on that item. The reality is that you have to look at your committee and say, is our committee a glass that's half full or glass that's half empty? Because the committees who are a glass that's half full, as soon as those items sell at guaranteed bid, they're going to high-five each other and say, woohoo, we've just sold something above its value. We've never done that before. And now we can take this sheet to the checkout team, and they can immediately get started on processing.
Yes.
That's what the glass is half full. But the committee that the glass is half empty is going to say, dang it, I bet we could have made more money on it. Dang it, we should have made it higher. Dang
a
it.
Bird in the hand is worth a lot more than a guess.
That would be my thinking, but, you know, I'm just saying what the arguments are.
So yes, but Sherry, you're the expert, so I'm going with you. And Sherry, I just wanted to make sure I have a chance to have you share with people any kind of webinar or some new program you have coming up.
I do. I got something. It's something new I'm experimenting with. I just recently got back from the National Auctioneers Association conference and show, which is in Spokane, Washington this year. And while I was out there, I competed in the international auctioneering competition. They separate the men and the women up, and you do a chanting competition. And I finished up in the top finalists. Didn't win, but I was in the finalists. And then this past weekend, I went to the Virginia Auctioneers Association, and I took first runner-up in the competition statewide for men competing against women. That one is a little bit more difficult, because there's all of us that are together. And so I thought, you know what? The number one question I'm asked as I go across the country is not any question about benefit auctions. Not. The number one question I'm asked is, how do you learn to talk so fast?
Oh, for heaven's sakes. I guess I always wondered that.
Well, and you know, it's not that difficult to learn. I have been out with friends before, and just in fun, I teach them a few simple drills, and I tell you, by the end of it, they've got a rudimentary chant that impresses their friends. It's enough to make them sound like an auctioneer.
Oh,
and so just literally for the fun of it, Renee, I'm going to be offering it. It's a free live webinar. It's got September the 6th. That's a Thursday. About a month from now. And what we're going to be doing is just, I'm going to teach you how to do a basic chant. I've got two times, 2 o'clock at Eastern and 8 o'clock Eastern, and you can sign up at redappleauctions.com. On the right-hand side, I've got a little spot there on the right-hand side that says upcoming event. If you click there, they'll be able to click through and get signed up for that and any other auction-related seminars that I've got coming out later that month.
Well, very good. Well, Sherry Truler of Red Apple Auctions, thanks so much for being on Nonprofit Spark.
It's been my pleasure.
Okay, we're going to take another little break for a word from our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Clifton Gunderson and Larson Allen, two national accounting firms, have come together to form Clifton Larson Allen. The combined firm serves more than 5,900 nonprofit and government clients. You can call on Clifton Larson Allen for help with financial and compliance audits, tax preparation, temporary or full-time accounting assistance, and to develop proactive financial strategies for tough economic times. Clifton Larson Allen cultivates long-lasting client relationships so they understand the issues you've faced and the challenges ahead of you. Learn more about Clifton Larson Allen on their website at www.cliftonlarsonallen.com. Clifton Larson Allen, noticeably different.
Welcome back to Nonprofit Spark. Once again, Sherry Truller's company website is redappleauctions.com. Now, Sherry focused on five things to pay attention to market the items at your silent auction so you raise more money. So here they are. First, use a good sound system to make announcements and point people's attention to key items. You know, I thought her point was interesting, that silent auctions shouldn't be silent. Number two, make sure your lighting makes participation easy and energizes people. And you may need to bring in some of your own lights to brighten up the room. Three, use more tables. Make sure you have adequate spacing between the items so you don't cheapen them by squeezing them all together. Four, create props for items near the bid sheets to capture bidders' attention and attract their bids and even competition among bidders. Five, add guaranteed bids to the bottom right of your bid sheets set at 125 to 200% of the actual cost of the items. So if people want an item and they don't want to have to keep checking back and standing around a bid sheet, you know what? They'll place a guaranteed bid. So it is a matter of convenience for them. And remember that men particularly like this idea. Well, I hope you heard some of the things on the show this week that you can use to boost your marketing and success at your next silent auction. So enjoy all that work and don't get too crazy. Follow me on Twitter at Nonprofit Spark, one word, capital N, capital S. Check out the show's blog at nonprofitsparkradio.com. Have a great week. Thanks for tuning in.
The staff of WebTalkRadio.net has a recommendation for those of you who are on the board of a nonprofit or work for one. Consider using a Nonprofit Spark show as a starting point for a great discussion about strategic planning, finances, fundraising, and more. All past shows are available in the archives. They offer a tremendous learning resource that you can access at your convenience. To learn more about Renee and her work, please visit her website at sparkplugconsulting.com. Or you can click on the globe on the screen in front of you. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again next week for another edition of Nonprofit Spark.